Assembly passes mining legislation. Republicans filibuster the CIA director nominee. And Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez dies. Some of the top international, national, and state news stories in the news this week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. We have attorney Ed Garvey and blogger Owen Robinson with us today, and we will have them comment on the top stories of the week, and we'll welcome your reactions and the stories you would like them to discuss. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Ed Garvey is a Madison attorney and editor of FightingBob.com. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
And Owen Robinson is a columnist at the West Bend Daily News and blogger at BootsandSabers.com. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Ed.
Hey, good morning, Owen.
All right, well, the Assembly last night passed this mining legislation. It streamlines the mine permitting process. And now it is on its way to the governor's desk. Owen Robinson, is this a good thing or not?
I think it is a good thing. And just to be clear, the bill just finally put some parameters around that permitting process and still gives them 480 days just to give the mine a yes or no answer and some limit on the amount of money and permitting they have to do. There's still strong environmental protections in place through the DNR and through the EPA and through the Army Corps of Engineers. I think it's a good plan. It opens up the gate a little bit, so hopefully we can bring some more business to Wisconsin.
So it's going to be okay for the environment should this mine go through, Ed?
No, of course not. I mean, no mine is safe, and certainly this one won't be. And when you just try to imagine this huge gash in the landscape of Wisconsin, you begin to question what's going on. And everything that's put forward these days is, oh, they're going to create jobs. Well, how many jobs are we talking about? And how much money could they possibly be paid? And do they have benefits or whatever? But the main thing is Wisconsin has been famous for protecting the environment, whether Republican or Democrat. Walker has ended that longstanding relationship, and now it's just Republican business versus the environmentalists.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Wisconsin is rightfully proud of its environmental history. And what I find so ludicrous about the argument, and I do think some of the true left-wing environmentalists are sincere in that they just don't want to mine.
All right, let's end it there.
Because of it being a gash. But what's kind of ludicrous about that is yet they still want to use the iron in their everyday life. But instead of having it mined in Wisconsin, where it can be done with stringent requirements and at least somewhat environmentally sound, nothing is foolproof, they'd rather have it mined in China or Southeast Asia, where there's virtually no protections. So unless you're going to not use the product, wouldn't we rather do it in a place where we can control it and where we can benefit from it than to send it overseas?
Well, I don't want to start out in the wrong foot here, but that's a silly argument. If you want to use iron, then you got to support the mine. I mean, what we're talking about here is the protection, not just for people who want to enjoy the state, but the tourist industry as well. And there's no indication anywhere in the world where you have a safe mine where they haven't had some problems. I don't think this mine is ever going to happen because the Bad River Tribe is going to oppose it. And the governor has treated the tribes as if they don't count, and they do count.
Yeah, well, I was just going to ask you if you expected that there would be some legal fights over this. And, I mean, Tom Tiffany, the state senator who was the primary author of this, was saying that in 3 to 5 years we might have a mine up there. You're saying no way, Ed?
I don't think so, because the potential pollution that will impact on the tribes is such that I don't think the courts are going to permit it, because the tribes are going to fight it. This is a big battle.
Yeah, and you know, Owen, you said that that this is could be done safely to the environment. I mean, didn't the bill itself declare that wetlands damage is presumed necessary?
Well, I think that, I mean, as Ed said, and I agree, nothing can be done 100% safely. What we can do is try our best to, if we're going to enjoy the fruits of our state, to do it in the most environmentally sound way that we can. But, and I do also agree with Ed, that I think 3 to 5 years is probably optimistic to have this mine in place, because the Bad River Tribe and others are going to sue, and they really can't to sue until the permitting is done and it's actually going to happen. So it's going to be years out in the future, but at least we've started that process of allowing it to happen. And frankly, it is a bit hypocritical of the Bad River Tribe themselves because they have a shady environmental past themselves that they're contending with, that they're filling in wetlands for a road and that they're polluting their own waters with their sewage plants. So it's a little bit hard for me to take them seriously as protectors of the environment.
Well, I think that tends to be the Republican response every time something comes up. They don't take the tribes seriously. The tribes, however, have treaty rights, and they have the right to protect the waters that will impact the rice crop and so on. So I think that one of the interesting things, I was standing outside demonstrating almost a year ago, we couldn't find out who drafted the bill. Ultimately, it turned out that it was the mining company drafted the bill with Wisconsin Manufacturers and Mining. Maybe, Owen, you were involved in helping them craft the legislation. But anytime you get a special interest like the mining company drafting the bill and submitting it to the legislature for action, you better put your dukes up.
So we have callers who also want to get in on this. Jim in Ashland is with us. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. First of all, I'd like to say that I also have a West Bend connection. I used to live in West Bend. I still subscribe to the paper. I read Owen's column. And I appeared next to him with an opinion piece of my own back on February 12th. We were on the same page, and on this particular issue of mining, I could not disagree with him more. I see the situation as sort of a misguided attempt to do what's right for the North and kind of a colonialist mentality that people in the southern part of the state have towards us up here and that they know better. Even people in this area, in Ashland, who might support mining, did not support this bill. It ignores, I think, the will of the people here. Also, as has been said, this is going to be tied up in court. There's going to be lawsuits. It ignores the Bad River Tribe. And I think we can probably look forward to some level of civil disobedience in the future. We have our own local Martin Luther King. His name is Mike Wiggins. I serve on the Ashland County Board. Our zoning committee is working on an ordinance where we will have some kind of local say about what happens with the mine. Yes. But it's the state wants to ignore what we do up here. I'm sure they will continue to do so.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Owen, you want to respond?
Well, thank you, Jim, by the way, for your call, and thank you for subscribing to the paper. I did read your piece, and it was very well done. But I think one of the points you miss is that this is a state issue because we're talking, it affects the entire state, not just Ashland County. When you're talking about the mine going in, there's also lots of businesses that do mining in southeast Wisconsin. You have the overall economic benefit for the state. You have the tax revenue. You have all kinds of things that does apply to the state. And it did go through, and this didn't come out of the blue. We've been working on this bill for 2 years now. So it's not something that was rammed through. It went through several iterations. It went through the entire legislative process, through the committee process. It went through everything that normal legislation went through, which is where representatives from your area of the state, as well as my area of the state, get to have their say through that process. So to say that a bill should be specifically crafted just for, you know, with only taking into consideration the local people that it affects directly is just not how things are done in a representative state.
What good things can you say about this in terms of the rest of the state? For example, the price of iron ore is at an all-time low. So it's not a very good investment at the moment, and it looks to many of us that the company itself would not even want to start under these circumstances because the prices are so low. How does this really help the state of Wisconsin? Are you talking about jobs or what?
Well, there are jobs within the community that are certainly that could be available that will put more people to work, and these are good jobs, good paying jobs.
How do you know that?
Support families. There are also, well, how do we know if we don't do it?
Well, have they even put forward? Have they even said what they would pay?
Also, keep in mind that there's also strong mining manufacturing in southeast Wisconsin with Joy Global, with Caterpillar. You know, we make things in Wisconsin. We're a manufacturing and mining state. We have been for generations. And many of the things that we make are used for digging things out of the ground. And to have a mine in our backyard that we could possibly have contracts supplied for those jobs is a good thing.
So you think it's going to be better for the manufacturing interests of mining equipment to have the mines rather than not?
I think if there are no mines, there's no mining equipment to be made.
Let's bring in one more call on this topic, and then we will have to move on. Chris in Oshkosh.
Hi. Ed came up and helped us in the town of Utica near Oshkosh with the ethanol plant issue, which also promised to be a great job producer. Instead, they built it with a court order not to build it. They then went into financial scandal and bankruptcy. They promised 5 trucks a day would be driving on the highways. We've replaced a town road and a county road's pavement adjacent to the plant since then. Promises are one thing, the reality is another. We've seen this with the ethanol plants. Why is this not going to happen at the mine? And once it's done, it's done. Lake Superior can't be fixed.
All right, a brief response, Owen, to that.
Businesses fail. It happens. But if you don't try, then you have no business. And as far as the ethanol, that's kind of a bad example. You're talking about a government-subsidized industry that really shouldn't have happened in the first place.
Well, it is. I mean, the problem is that the federal government does subsidize ethanol. But what the caller was discussing is that despite the fact that the people said they don't want it and it violated the smart growth plans, they went ahead and did it anyway, despite what the court said. I mean, I think as people are watching the mining companies operate now, you're going to see them just trying to plow ahead. They're not going to pay any attention to what the rules and regulations are. They haven't even opened an office in Wisconsin. They'd like to operate this from Florida, where I guess it's safer territory or whatever. But I've seen nothing yet. When they say that it creates jobs, I remember Tom Harkin said even slaves had jobs. But the question is, what kind of jobs? How much are they going to pay? How much difference does it make? Are they going to put this money in escrow? What are they going to do?
Quick quick sum up on this because we have to move on. The bill goes to the governor's desk. He's expected to sign it.
Oh, really?
Are we ever going to see a mine in northern Wisconsin?
No.
And Owen?
I think we will, but I think it's a ways out.
Owen Robinson is a columnist at the West Bend Daily News. Ed Garvey is a Madison attorney, editor of FightingBob.com. Our two guests today for the Week in Review. Coming up, we are going to talk about another big national issue in the news this week. It was the confirmation of CIA Director John Brennan, but not before a filibuster. We'll talk about that coming up next. A little bit later, we'll talk about the death of Hugo Chavez, and we will talk about other state, national, and international news stories that were in the news this week that you want to bring up. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This afternoon during At Issue After 4, it's your views on the news. You can call in and talk about the story that mattered most to you this week during your views on the news after 4 every Friday afternoon. Every Friday morning, we have our Friday Week in Review with two guests from different political perspectives discussing and debating the news of the week. Talked about the mining bill that passed last night in the state assembly. Now let's talk about a big national story. There was a 13-hour filibuster by Rand Paul, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. He said that the administration does not have the authority to use drones to kill U.S. citizens on American soil, and he was filibustering the confirmation of CIA Director John Brennan with this issue. Eventually, the U.S. Senate did give the thumbs up to Brennan once the filibuster ended. And once Attorney General Eric Holder said that, no, the U.S. does not have the authority and will not strike U.S. citizens on U.S. soil unless they were engaged in combat. Owen Robinson, was this filibuster by Rand Paul worth it?
I think it was, because we got the answer we needed. And first, I just want to say it was refreshing to see an actual filibuster rather than the lazy threat of filibuster the Senate's grown into the habit of using of late. But I think it was a very important constitutional question of whether the executive branch, or whether the United States government, has the authority to kill people with a drone who are not engaged in combat on American soil. And this is a subject that the administration had been very, very unclear about up until the filibuster, and it worked. And Paul got his answer, and Brennan was confirmed, and now we understand where that line is drawn.
So what did you think of the filibuster and the whole issue of the drones in the U.S., Ed?
Well, my first reaction was, when I saw this, that Rand Paul was probably a couple of bubbles off a plum. But the more I looked at it, who knew that this was still an issue between the United States government and members of the Congress, that indeed, if you just look at the idea of drones killing Americans anywhere, whether it's abroad or here in this country, there should be a total openness, because it's not just this president, it'll be the next president and the next president. So who knows what a Dick Cheney or a George Bush or a Jeb Bush or whoever else, Mario Rubio or whatever, would say is the policy of this government. I found it to be staggering that the administration had so much difficulty saying that we don't have the right to kill Americans without some combat role. What the heck is going on when you think about the United States using drones to kill Americans?
Let's talk a little bit about Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez died of cancer at the age of 58 this week. Venezuela's vice president is now serving as interim president until elections are called sometime next month. Chavez wasn't exactly a friend to the United States. Made international headlines when he was referring to former President George Bush as the devil at a United Nations meeting some years ago. Ed Garvey, what does it mean? What does Chavez's death mean for the U.S. interests?
Well, Chavez spoke for the very poor in Venezuela, and there are millions of really poverty-stricken people. They live in tar shacks and open sewers. The same is true in Santiago. I've been in those slums, and I'll tell you, it's hard to believe how bad things are. And Chavez was trying to get some of that oil money into the hands of the people who were poor, setting up health facilities and the like. The United States tried to overthrow him, worked with a polling company, Penn and Schoen, when they announced that he was going to lose the recall, and of course they ended up being wrong. I don't think it's going to be much of a difference, but any leader of a country in South America that says, well, I'm going to be closely allied with the United States of America, probably has some explaining to do. So it'll be interesting to see who follows Chavez, because indeed the United States was trying to overthrow him. And the United States has played a terrible role in South America and Chile, supporting Pinochet and the overthrow of the government in Chile and so on and so forth. So I think we'll miss him as well.
Owen, your thoughts on the death of Hugo Chavez?
And will you be going to the funeral?
Well, apparently it's going to be on permanent display, so I'll be able to go anytime and see him. But clearly, I think I have a different view of Chavez's history than Ed. I do think that he was a tyrant. He was a bully. He supported tyrants like Assad and Ahmadinejad. And frankly, I'm glad he's gone. What it means to U.S. interests, though, I think is less clear, because he did leave a political heir, if you will, but an heir that has no base of support like Chavez had. And anytime you have a strong, charismatic leader like Chavez leave a nation, you have a power vacuum. And when we're talking about Venezuela, which has a large population, which has a huge oil reserves, which we still import 10% of our oil from Venezuela into the United States, I mean, it can have significant both economic and political ramifications to the United States. But I think we need to watch it closely and see who's going to fill that vacuum.
Sticking with international news, North Korea is vowing to nuke the United States. North Korea's leader is accusing Washington of pushing to start a nuclear war with the North. And obviously, this isn't the first time that North Korea has done some saber rattling. How concerned should we be about this, Owen?
It's always hard to tell with North Korea because they rattle their saber a lot, and they're pretty ineffective at actually doing anything. But it is a concern. It was interesting to see that China actually backed the sanctions in the UN against North Korea, and China is a historic ally of North Korea. And my concern now, honestly, and I saw some people poo-pooing the nuclear threat regarding because North Korea hasn't proven the ability to be able to actually launch a nuclear weapon well. But I think the more serious fear is not that. It's the nuclear weapon or the dirty bomb sitting in a storage container somewhere in a Navy base in Japan are the concerns that we should have about North Korea. So, you know, you still have a young new leader there trying to assert his authority in, both in the world and in his own country. Usually when they rattle their sabers, it's for internal political reasons and really has nothing to do with the rest of the world. But they are still a thorn in the side of freedom in this world. And we need to always be concerned about what they say.
Ed?
Don't mess with Dennis Rodman, I say.
I was going to say, is Dennis Rodman going to solve this for
he
us?
He loves the man. This is terrific stuff.
Hey, Secretary of State Kerry said this week that Dennis Rodman was a great basketball player, and as a diplomat, he was a great basketball player.
I don't often agree with Kerry, but I sure do there.
Well, this is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Owen Robinson and Ed Garvey. If you have an issue from the news this week that you would like to have them address, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We're kind of jumping around from state, national, and international issues. Let's go back to Washington, D.C. President Obama and top budget leaders broke bread this week while discussing fiscal matters. They had a dinner together. Obama is trying to build support among rank-and-file Republicans for starting talks on a long-term deficit reduction deal. Paul Ryan gave us a little taste of a plan this week to ease federal deficits without raising taxes, but President Obama insists that higher taxes need to be a part of the solution. Do you think a deal is going to be reached, Ed, on this budget deficit?
Well, at some point it's going to be, but we really are in a strange moment in our history where there's no longer the idea of governing if once you're elected, and elections just hang around forever. So instead of trying to work out a compromise, it seems to me that Boehner is trying to figure out how to embarrass the president, and that's the same thing with Paul Ryan, and the Democrats are trying to embarrass the Republicans. There doesn't seem to be a desire to put the American people first. And I think that's the problem. Eventually, it's going to have to be solved because you can't continue as a great power in this world without having any kind of control over your finances.
Owen?
I'm stunned. I agree with everything Ed just said. And
that includes the stuff about...
I think that the reason these news stories are so prominent right now is evidence of that. If Obama and Boehner and all of those guys were actually spending their time governing instead of campaigning, the fact that you have the president meeting with congressional leaders wouldn't even be news because it would happen on a regular basis. And so the fact that it's news is news. And I think that I agree with Ed. We've never left campaign mode, and right now we see people already gearing up for the next presidential election. But at some point, we do have real needs in this country and real fiscal issues that need to be solved.
When I was growing up, I remember when Dwight Eisenhower was elected president. My father at dinner said, "He is now our president, and we will not have any negative comments in this house until his term is over." I mean, those were the days when you said, well, all right, let's have an election. And once the election is over, then everyone respects the one who wins and you go forward. This is just craziness.
Well, let's talk just a bit about Paul Ryan's plan. apparently, he says, looks a lot like what he proposed last year. And this plan is expected to propose cuts to agency budgets, food stamps, and Medicaid, and contain a controversial proposal to turn Medicare into a voucher-like program for seniors younger than 55. Is this going to be met any differently this year, Owen?
I doubt it. I suspect it'll take the same path. But I think that something obviously has to be done about the big entitlement. Something has to be done about discretionary spending, and something has to be done about our tax system. And here, you know, I think Ryan sometimes falls into the trap. Perhaps it's not a trap, but he thinks in grand vision of trying to change everything at once to come to a final solution in one fell swoop. Where we're probably better off is taking these individual items and taking them one at a time so we can have a debate about how we reform Medicare, Medicaid, without having to wrap it around with all the other issues, which Social Security and military spending and all of that. So these things don't become a compromise. It becomes a discussion about, is this better long-term for the American people to make that program work and solvent, and then move on to the next program?
Mm-hmm. Medicare changes, Ed?
I think that Ryan is playing with fire, of course, and I think that he's going to get his fingers burned because the American people want Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security left alone because they have not contributed to the deficit. And it's really a shame that as Paul Ryan was growing up, he didn't get a book beyond Ayn Rand to, you know, perhaps Keynesian economics or something might have helped him. But the idea that we're going to find ourselves in a position of using vouchers for health care is ridiculous. I mean, nobody thinks that would work, except Paul Ryan, apparently. So I think he's going to lose on that issue. There's no way that the President of the United States can go along with the Ryan plan. So there's going to have to be some give on the side of the Republicans.
Well, because of the sequestration cuts, the across-the-board cuts, the White House this week announced that it's canceling White House tours because of staff reductions, furloughs, whatever. And so no more White House tours, at least until this gets resolved. And some Republicans aren't taking this too kindly. One congressman proposes that the president can't go golfing anymore until the White House tours resume again. Ed, what do you think of this?
Well, this is how it gets reduced to a level of absurdity. I mean, who cares whether there's a White House tour for tourists? I mean, it's a nice idea, and hopefully they can continue in the future, but it's hardly a matter of big policy. The idea of saying that Obama can't play golf, Tiger Woods could probably assure you of that, having played with the president at some point. But it's just silliness. I mean, what we're talking about here are millions of people who are denied health care, millions of people who are unemployed, millions of people who are underpaid. So we have the bill coming forward now to increase the minimum wage to $10.10 rather than the very small increase that Obama was calling for. And they ought to be focused on those kinds of issues that really impact the American people as a whole. Health care, jobs, and decent wages.
Well, the House Speaker John Boehner says that people can come on down to the Capitol building and still get a tour there. Owen, what do you make of this?
Well, apparently gone are the days of Andrew Jackson, where it was truly the people's house. But, you know, Ed's right. This is ridiculous, and it's a bit of political theater on Obama's part to try and hold up this little nugget of spending that's really nothing in terms of the entire budget and really nothing in terms of affecting most Americans as somehow punishing us for the sequestration. And I think what we've seen with Obama in the past couple weeks is he really was banking on the American people being outraged at the so-called cuts from the sequestration deal. And nobody really is, and really his approval ratings have been dropping, which is why you see him finally negotiating. But really, until he stops taking his 20-car entourage to go two blocks away for dinner, you know, at the cost of hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's hard to take him seriously that this is really where the government needs to be cut.
Now, this is the fourth time you've agreed with me, so I think I'm going to put $400 in the Fighting Bob Fest in your name.
There we go. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. Let's talk a little bit about the State Department. Last Friday, after our last week in review, did release a report, a review of research regarding the Keystone XL pipeline. And essentially, this review said that this pipeline would not cause any significant damage to the environment, to make a long story short. So, Ed, you kind of are shaking your head there. You don't believe this report?
No, it was predictable because apparently the forces that are pushing this pipeline love the idea of the Secretary of State having something to say about it. Since when do we ask the State Department to rule on environmental issues in this country? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. This pipeline makes no sense. We now have the warmest temperatures in the world that we've had for 4,000 years. We see climate change affecting everything about our existence. If this pipeline goes through and they ship all this oil from Canada, the tar sands, to Texas, there's an economic disaster right around the corner. So I think this is an issue where the President of the United States should say, I'm going to make the decision. It's my cabinet. It's my responsibility. I'm going to stop this pipeline from going through.
Owen, do you think that'll happen?
It's the same people who oppose the pipeline are the ones who oppose the mine. They want all the benefits of modern society and yet aren't willing to do anything about it. And with things like the pipeline, I'd rather, whether or not it's economically feasible for the people who are going to invest billions of dollars, I'd rather trust their judgment and their analysis than, frankly, me or Ed sitting here talking on the radio.
What?
Wait. Well, we will... take a short pause. Coming up, we have our Week in Review quiz. We'll talk about other issues in the news, including we'll go back to some state of Wisconsin issues coming up, including a growing resistance from Republicans to Governor Walker's school voucher plan, and much more. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's time now for the Week in Review quiz. I'm Joy Cardine. Wisconsin will be the place to be for the nation's governors this summer. The National Governors Association will be holding its annual meeting in Milwaukee in August. And Governor Walker wants to make sure that all the governors have a great stay. And he is planning a fun event, he says, for his 49 colleagues. What is it? What kind of fun event is Governor Walker planning for the other governors when they come to Milwaukee this August? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Gotta stop laughing. And you can also email us, talk@WPR.org. I don't know why I'm finding this so funny, but I am.
Because you're imagining the governor in a dunk tank.
There we go. Now, don't give it away if you know, because we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and we will offer you, the winner, a book that we have featured on the program recently. We'll have the answer and announce the winner at the end of the show. All right, well, let's talk about another state of Wisconsin issue. It looks like the number of Republican lawmakers are growing. There's increased resistance to Governor Walker's plans to expand the school voucher program. This is the program that gives parents taxpayer-financed vouchers to use in private or parochial schools. Senate President Mike Ellis said Walker's proposal will have to be dramatically changed because a majority of senators find it unacceptable. What do you make of this opposition, Owen?
I think every time we've had the debate about school vouchers, ever since it first came up, this has always been somewhat of a regional issue in Wisconsin, where there's certain areas of the state that just flat out oppose any sort of voucher system. It has nothing to do with party lines, it has to do with more geography than anything else. And I think we see this debate coming in again. I think there needs to be continued discussion about how to reform education. I think frankly, going back to the initial debate, I think the Republicans, out of perhaps expediency to get vouchers passed the first time, crafted it in a way as designed for essentially poor kids to get out of failing schools, which is a noble goal, when in reality we should be talking about whether or not we are funding the best system and whether or not that money should be attached to kids who can have a great education at any school of their choice, or whether we should be more focused on keeping our education infrastructure in place.
Ed, what do you think?
Well, the suggestion that Owen just made, that the legislature crafted something, is kind of staggering. The thought that this full-time legislature with a part-time agenda crafted this, it's all about privatization. They don't care about what happens to the results of this the vouchers themselves. And I think this governor is intent on privatizing everything he can get his hands on. So I am happy that Mike Ellis has spoken up. I think most Republicans and most Democrats are going to oppose this because it just doesn't make any sense. They don't have a better record. They don't do a better job of educating. It makes it much more difficult for people with special needs and for their kids to be educated. So I think it's a bad idea that will fail. Years ago, David Graven, who ran for governor of Minnesota, I ran into him after the DFL had won all the seats on the Minneapolis City Council. I said, what do you think is going to happen, David? He said, well, it's not just a probability, it's a certainty they'll destroy each other, because you got to have some kind of opposition. I think the problem the Republicans face at the moment is that with the Republican governor, a gerrymandered Republican legislature in the Assembly and in the Senate and the Supreme Court, they're not going to start fighting among themselves. And that's kind of going to be kind of fun.
Do you think that this plan is going to happen, Owen?
I don't think, as Walker has put it in place, it'll happen. I think there'll be some expansion of vouchers somewhere in the state in some fashion. How that's going to look after it gets to the meat grinder of the legislature, we don't know. And I would disagree with that a little bit. That I think I think it's healthy for the Republican Party to have these internal debates, to have differences of opinion. It just illustrates what a big tent party it is, as opposed to the lockstep Democrats in the Assembly.
Well, and it shows that every once in a while, some Republicans are right.
Well, Mike Ellis is also proposing an alternative plan to Governor Walker's budget that would allow public school spending to increase $150 more per student over the next 2 years. Senator Ellis's plan would cost $382 million, but relies on a mixture of existing funding that Walker put into his budget, and $153 million in additional money from property taxes over the next 2 years. Let's see, Owen, two Republicans, Luther Olson as well, want to spend more on education.
No surprise when we finally have a budget with a surplus in it that you have some that want to raise taxes and spend more. I think those are going to have I think it's likely we will see some increase in K-12 funding in this next budget by the time it gets through. I don't think it'll be much, and I don't think tax increases are going to make it past Walker's veto.
What do you think, Ed?
Well, this is a real problem because Walker has done such harm to public education that you'd have to go back a couple of years before you could get to where we are today. I mean, you can't just force teachers out of the classroom, cut the amount of money allocated for schools dramatically, and then say, oh, gee, this is going to get better. What's going to get better? I can't see anything that the governor has proposed that would give any confidence to parents that their children are going to get a better education.
By the way, we are hoping to follow up on school vouchers and school funding, and we did put out a call to Senator Ellis to join us on our state capitol report on Monday at 7:30. We have not received a response yet, but if he's unable to, I'm sure we probably can find another guest to talk more about.
I'm available.
Would you like to talk more, Ed? That's great.
I'll handle Mike Ellis.
You know, in other state news this week, the investigation into Governor Walker's former aides and colleagues came to a close without the governor being charged. Walker says he's glad it's over. Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca says that Governor Walker is guilty of bad judgment. Some Democrats say the governor should apologize that he had working for him in his Milwaukee County Executive's Office these aides who broke the law in various ways. Ed, John Doe is over and the governor doesn't get charged.
Yeah, my feeling is that let's drop it. I mean, he's been investigated. The district attorney in Milwaukee is a very competent civil servant. And, they found after a long investigation that he wasn't guilty of anything. And so let's move on.
Yeah, no apology necessary.
No, I don't think you apologize. I don't think anything. I think just go on doing what you're doing. We can argue about policies, but I don't think you should say, well, he probably should have been charged. Well, that's why we have hearings, and that's why we have standards. That's why we have due process, because if you're charged with something, and they find there's no basis for it, then you're free to go on and do the rest of your job.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Owen, on the end of the John Doe?
You know, Joy, I'm going to have to stop coming on this show if I have to keep agreeing with Ed. I agree. I think it's time to move on. I think that it's good that the people that have been charged and brought to justice, particularly the ones who stole from the veterans, I think that they got what they deserved. And it is time to move on politically. And it has been very entertaining to watch the, you know, gnashing of teeth and rending of cloth in the union and Democratic strongholds around the state. But it's over, and we have bigger things to talk about.
Well, one more side note on the end of the John Doe. Democratic Party spokesperson Graham Zielinski did tweet upon the news that the John Doe was over that Governor Walker had better lawyers than Jeffrey Dahmer. A lot of people got very upset for the comparison with a mass murderer. And it turns out that the Democratic Party did remove Zielinski as spokesperson for the party. And he still works for the party, but he's not going to be the spokesperson. Ed, what do you make of this move?
Well, I was furious when I saw the statement. I mean, to compare someone with Jeffrey Dahmer, a serial killer and cannibal, I mean, this is ridiculous. And so it seems to me that when you make a comment that that's so far over the top, that I do think it's time to hire some new people.
You're going to agree with Ed again, I bet, Owen.
to a degree. I do find it curious that Zielinski has been a rhetorical bomb thrower, you know, with over-the-top tweets and statements for years now, and it's a little surprising that this was the straw that broke the camel's back. But I think what's interesting is that they demoted him, and yet he's still receiving salary, he's still on staff, and he's going to whisper in reporters' ears instead of going on record. I'm not sure how that improves anything. And it's also been interesting to watch. There has started to be some buzz, particularly in the liberal blogosphere, to remove Tate. They're mad at him for demoting Zielinski at all. They thought Graham was right. So
that's ridiculous.
Well, I've seen some of those blogs, too, and it wasn't just over Zielinski thinking that Mike Tate should needs to be challenged for a Democratic Party chair. Ed, do you think that he will be challenged?
I think so. I mean, the Democratic Party has really dropped the ball in so many instances, and we're now in a situation where it's kind of hard to know where the Democratic Party stands on a variety of issues. They're not putting out alternative plans. They're not getting people ready to run for public office. They're not raising the money. They're not doing the things that you have to do. So I think it is time for some changes.
Yeah. Well, you know, tonight on Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television, I need to let listeners know they can tune in for a special Supreme Court candidate special. Justice Pat Rogensack and challenger Ed Falone will discuss the issues ahead of their April 2nd election. So you will see some information about the state Supreme Court justice race on Here and Now tonight on Wisconsin Public Television at 7:30. We also are planning to, we have invited the candidates running for state Supreme Court justice and for Department of Public Instruction, the candidates running in that, to join us later this month for candidate forums. But I wanted to get you both, maybe just a quick a recap of the race. You handicapped this race for us, Ed, first on between Pat Rogensack and Ed Falone.
Well, I suspect that Owen is not going to agree with me that Ed Falone is the right choice. I think the Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin, used to be one of the great courts in the country, has fallen on some very tough times, and I think Pat Rogensack is the leader of the Prosser faction on the court that has destroyed public confidence in the Supreme Court as an institution. So, I, you know, it's too bad, but I think that we have to come up with some better way to do it. I'm almost at the point where I agree with the State Journal that maybe we should appoint members of the court and then have a referendum on them or some other system, because this is not working. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce will pour in hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, to help Rogensack. And we should not be electing justices based on how much money they can raise. It just destroys the system from the outset.
Well, we also this week saw a letter that Justice Pat Rogensack wrote apologizing to the citizens of the state for the tensions on the court. However, Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson said the letter was instantly divisive. Meanwhile, Rogensack says that her heart aches over the approach her challenger Ed Falone has taken in the race, saying Rogensack should be replaced because of the uncivil nature of the court. Is that a good reason to vote Rogensack out of office, Ed?
Any reason would be good enough for me. But it just seems to me that when you have a member of the court putting his hands around the neck of a Supreme Court justice, a colleague, and saying when he sort of came to, he asked, why were my hands around her neck? Something should have been done. I mean, at that point, anger management training, something should be done. It wasn't done, and instead it became a divisive issue where the Prosser faction lined up on one side and the Shirley Abrahamson faction on another. So I think that Shirley Abrahamson is one of the great justices that we have in this country, and I think that Ann Walsh Bradley has been doing a terrific job. I think we need to have some new blood on the court, and I think we could start with Falone.
What do you think, Owen?
Well, I mean, I will say it has been refreshing, given the history of the past couple of Supreme Court races that Wisconsin's had, that this race is actually being run with, you know, somewhat civil discourse and talking about true, you know, things that you know, how the court operates and you know, issues about recusal and things that are actual to do with the court rather than ancillary issues and bomb throwing. But so that's been a little refreshing to see. I don't think that really, though, all the issues that Falone has brought up have justified taking a sitting Supreme Court justice who's been there for 10 years, serving the state of Wisconsin and serving it well, giving thoughtful judicial opinions. I don't think there's enough to justify throwing an incumbent like that off the court.
This would be a time for a deal if we could get rid of Scalia, perhaps to throw it in the bargain.
Well, I don't know if we have. There is a state representative, Brett Halsey of Madison, is in the news this week for an odd situation where he wanted one of his aides to set up some sort of self-defense class for protecting yourself against somebody with box cutters, and he brought box cutters to the office. This aide has been reassigned based on her fear stated during this situation. But Brett Halsey will stay in office. Ed, your quick thoughts on what's happening there?
I don't have much to say about it because I don't really know the details. This is a tough accusation. If it's true, some action is going to have to be taken by either the Democratic Party or the legislature itself, or who knows, maybe the courts. But I don't know enough to really go beyond that.
Owen, quick react.
And I think clearly the behavior is charitably odd enough that it deserves a look at. And I think that if we have somebody who's unstable in that position, it's something that, you know, the legislature or the party needs to do something about.
Not that being unstable is a disqualifier to be in the legislature.
That is true.
All right, well, time to congratulate Gary in Iron River, who is our Week in Review quiz winner. He correctly guessed that Governor Walker is planning on going on a Harley ride with his 49 other colleagues, the nation's governors, when they visit Milwaukee this August. So he'll actually be helping them with lessons. Harley Davidson has offered each governor lessons in riding a Harley. All right. Well, Ed Garvey, Owen Robinson, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
Owen Robinson and Ed Garvey are our guests this week for the Week in Review. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you have a great weekend. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.